Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We'll forgive you if you chose to watch Jeremy Lin or American Idol last night. We've got you covered when it comes to the GOP debate. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. In the month-long gap between last night's debate and the previous one, lots changed. All of a sudden, Rick Santorum surged to the top of the polls and is hoping to be the last man standing when the carousel of GOP candidate frontrunners comes to a halt. During the CNN debate last night, there was plenty of back and forth, but here's the moment when the candidates were asked to describe themselves in one word. Yes, one word.
Consistent. Courage.
Resolute.
Cheerful.
By the way, here is Newt Cheerful Gingrich answering the very next question.
I think this is a very sober period, and I believe this is the most dangerous president on national security grounds in American history.
USA Today's Washington Bureau Chief Susan Page joins me now. Susan, welcome back to WNYC.
Andrea, it's great to be with you.
So we just heard three of the four candidates describing themselves with a word that starts with C. Not one said conservative. What'd you think of that moment?
I thought it was I thought when we were waiting for Mitt Romney to answer the question, he might say conservative because that goes to a weakness he's had with Republican voters who don't think he is particularly conservative or not at least consistently conservative. But what an interesting little test that question was. Most surprising, I thought, Gingrich, who is many things, but cheerful would not be in the top 10 lists of adjectives I'd use about him.
I guess it goes to show that when you describe yourself, you can say anything. This was certainly the crankiest of the debates. I mean, they all looked extremely unhappy to be there, and not least of which might have been Rick Santorum, who was really assertive. It was Romney's job to bring him down, and the first line of attack on Rick Santorum was a long stretch on his record on earmarks. Romney's running ads calling Santorum a Washington insider. Santorum himself has said in the past that he supports the earmark process. Last night, Santorum tried to argue he was once for good earmarks, but now?
I do believe there was abuse, and I said we should stop it. And as president, I would impose earmarks.
Well, Governor? I didn't follow all of that, but I can tell you this. I would put a ban on earmarks. I think it opens the door to excessive spending on projects that don't need to be done. I think there are a lot of projects that have been voted for. You voted for the bridge to nowhere.
Susan Page, what is this debate about earmarks really all about? And does the president really have the power to do anything about it?
Well, the president can use his bully pulpit, but Congress would have to ban earmarks, not the president. That's how the appropriations process would work. You know, what a great exchange from Romney's point of view, where you've got Rick Santorum trying to explain and defend one of those practices in Washington that all of America hates and views with great suspicion, and not explaining it particularly well. You know, actually, Newt Gingrich jumped in and tried to help him out by saying it's one of the tools you could use with a Republican Congress could use against a Democratic president to pursue their priorities. But, you know, in this particular climate, the idea that you're out there trying to defend earmarks, just a big loser, especially, I think, with a Republican electorate. And on issue after issue last night, you saw Rick Santorum, who finally made his way to the middle of the stage, right? Finally the front runner in the GOP race, having to explain and defend the things he did when he was the senator from Pennsylvania.
Well, I guess when you're sort of, you know, in the back of the pack, you can reinvent yourself however you like. But when you're the front runner, you have to actually start answering for what you did. And, you know, this seemed to be sort of, you know, the kind of calling on the carpet moment for Rick Santorum, in which, you know, I mean, his defense was, I was a good Republican senator. You know, I followed my party. I made choices. I made compromises. But it doesn't really play very well, does it, with the Republican electorate?
Think about the words you just used. I engaged in compromises. I mean, that's become a dirty word. I followed my party. Following anything now seems to be anathema. As Republican, at least the most energized part of the Republican electorate, you know, very conservative voters, Tea Party supporters, are not looking for compromise, and they're not looking for people who will follow the party, but they're looking for people who will really take on President Obama and who will stand up for very bold and conservative policies. I mean, President Obama, great night for President Obama. In those, remember those early debates, what was it like 50 years ago when they had the first debate in this cycle? When President Obama was really the one who was the focus of a lot of the conversation, there were some harsh words about him, especially when it came to foreign policy, but most of the evening they were focused on one another and trying to hurt the other guy on stage.
Well, and also, I mean, it's striking because does anybody remember the economy? I mean, you know, I heard earmarks, I heard contraception, I heard all kinds of things last night, but the idea of the sort of economy being the big weakness of President Obama, I mean, either the Republicans have concluded it isn't, or they just don't care at this time.
Andrea, such a great point. And you know what word got said only 6 times in 2 hours? Jobs. You know,
wow.
In a very focused debate, you would have been hearing jobs 6 times a minute, 6 times in 2 hours. Anybody said the word jobs last night.
So, you know, for Santorum, I mean, it's kind of an interesting conundrum because you said everybody hates earmarks. But, of course, everybody doesn't hate earmarks when you live in the state where, you know, the goods are brought back. And I'm wondering, you know, in the general election, if Rick Santorum got that far, if it could help him to be the senator who, you know, supported these transportation projects and other projects and sort of, you know, brought them to his home state and could argue that, you know, he would do that again.
You know, that has been the case in the past, but I think in this climate, earmarks for a lot of Americans, not just Republicans, have become a symbol of wasteful spending, of government spending that's out of control. You know, even among liberal voters, we see concern about the size of the deficit and the national debt. So I think that this is not a campaign in which defending earmarks or saying, you know, bringing home the bacon, that kind of thing. It's just not the time when that resonates with anybody but a fraction of American voters. If you can talk about fiscal discipline, about putting America's books in order, about restoring the economy in a more disciplined way, that's a message that seems to be really resonating with a lot of voters now.
Now, you mentioned the Newt Gingrich talking about Mitt Romney. Let's listen to that clip of him now.
I think it was totally appropriate for you to ask for what you got. I just think it's kind of silly for you to then turn around and run an ad attacking somebody else for getting what you got, and then claiming what you got wasn't what they got because what you got was right and what they got was wrong.
Now, he was talking about the Salt Lake City Olympics that Mitt Romney headed. So you mentioned it, you know, is there sort of no way for Rick Santorum to spin this positively? What about Mitt Romney?
It's been the Salt Lake City earmarks in a positive way?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I think the Salt Lake City Olympics is a real asset for Mitt Romney, a real calling card with Americans everywhere. I mean, it's like making the best apple pie. I mean, everybody loves the Olympics, so you want the Olympics to be successful. And it is a fact that he took over the Olympics at a time when the Salt Lake City Olympics were in some trouble and delivered a very successful Olympic game. So, yes, I think that is not a case where the earmark cuts against Mitt Romney, and in fact, a fair share of the earmarks that he sought were for security purposes at the Olympics, and that's also an issue on which I think there's pretty broad support.
So net positive for him that Salt Lake City Olympics was raised.
I think so, yeah.
Now, even though this debate was in Arizona, the primary there is really being overshadowed by the contest in Michigan, and a big question is what Mitt Romney can do to convince Michigan voters to vote for him, even though he didn't support the 2009 auto bailout. So here's Rick Santorum talking about his opposition to the bailout, and he's contrasting his position with Romney's.
I would just say to them that I, in principle, opposed government coming in and bailing out a sector of the economy or an industry with government dollars and with government manipulation of that market, which is exactly what happened twice. In 2008 and 2009. He supported the folks on Wall Street and bailed out Wall Street, was all for it. And then when it came to the auto workers and the folks in Detroit, he said no. That to me is not a consistent principled position. I had one. I believe in markets. not just when they're convenient for me.
Now, is that, first of all, is that factually accurate? Is he describing Mitt Romney's positions correctly? And if so, does this argument work for Santorum in Michigan?
Yes, the argument is accurate. And, you know, the auto bailout issue is a tricky one for both these candidates in Michigan. I spent 3 days in Michigan last week and was at events with both men. And the auto bailout is popular even with Republican voters in Michigan because you remember, boy, it looked like the auto industry was about to sink under the level of the sea, and now it has come roaring back in a big way. And that's important to voters in Michigan. But because they both opposed the Detroit bailout, you don't hear a lot about it among Michigan voters, and it doesn't seem. My feeling after talking to Republican audiences in several locations is that that's not a dividing issue in the Republican contest. Now, if either of these guys gets nominated for president, I think their position on the auto bailout really makes it hard for them to get Michigan, which is one of those states that we've been looking at as a key battleground.
So, and in fact, there was a Marist poll out that showed that most Democrats and independents, those numbers are particularly high in Michigan, supporting the bailout. So does this go to the argument, I mean, you know, this all kinds of states are being contested that people didn't actually think would be contested because people seem to assume that this thing would be settled long ago. So I'm wondering whether, you know, having to sort of stand up there on national television and talk about your position on the auto bailout now really helps these Republican candidates, at the end of the day, or whether having a drawn-out primary is actually hurting their party because they have to be talking about issues and positions like that that people might not have known about or focused on otherwise.
You know, exactly right. And, you know, the other way in which this long primary and this rather bitter primary, I think, is doing some damage to Republicans is that it's denting the image of the candidates in personal ways, too. I mean, we've seen the unfavorable rating for Mitt Romney get much higher on the unfavorable side among independents as this race has gone on. He's also been forced to take more conservative positions and take them in a kind of harsher way than he had hoped to initially. You know, initially he was focused on the economy. He was trying not to talk so much about social issues or about immigration. Last night he talked about social issues to some degree and took another hard line on immigration. Those are ways that will complicate his life if he gets the nomination. On the other hand, Andrea, I think we ought to remember what happened in 2008 when you had that very extended battle between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side. It turned out to help them in November because Democratic voters were all ginned up about the campaign, and there were organizations in some of these late states where candidates usually didn't have to build organizations in primaries. That helped Democrats last time around in the general election.
So, I mean, it certainly doesn't look like it from this standpoint. You know, I was actually thinking about that very same thing. Like, what is it about 2008 where a long, drawn-out primary helped the Democratic Party and it seems to be hurting the Republican Party? And because you would think that the same thing, you know, to win Democratic primary, you would also have to move more to the fringe to stake out your claims. But, you know, that sort of isn't exactly what happened. So I'm wondering, I mean, is there a hidden advantage here for the Republicans? Are they going to have the organization? You know, is there a silver lining for them in this long, drawn-out primary?
You know, there it's possible there could be, and we've been wrong about so many things this year that I'm not sure I feel very confident that when we predict anything that's going to happen. But one difference between now and the Democratic primaries in 2008 is the language and the attacks are much harsher between the Republicans now than they were between the two Democrats in 2008, much more personal. And I think they seem much more... They seem much more personal in that these candidates really don't seem to like each other.
Yeah, no, it was like sit next to your, you know, kindergarten friends that you just fought with, is sort of what they look
exactly.
Like.
Exactly. Yeah. The only people who seemed to like each other on the stage last night were Ron Paul and Romney. They were kind of a tag team against Santorum. But, boy, you put Gingrich, Santorum, and Romney in a room together, it's hard to see them getting together and having a beer.
Now, let's talk a little bit. We've been talking about the bailouts. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about the Wall Street bailout, because this is something that, you know, the Wall Street bailout something that a lot of, you know, Americans, especially sort of, you know, poor Americans, feel very uncomfortable with. And here's what Mitt Romney said about why he supported it.
I was concerned that if we didn't do something, there was a pretty high risk that not just Wall Street banks, but all banks would collapse. And like many other people, many other economists, they were concerned that our entire currency system would go down. My view is this. We have to have industries that get in trouble go through bankruptcy.
Now, you know, it's complicated to say we should have saved the banks, right? Especially when so many Americans lost their homes. They're sort of, you know, why are the banks getting a bailout and I'm not? You know, I'm sort of wondering again, looking forward to the general election, if Romney is the nominee, you know, how does this whole Wall Street bailout argument cut for or against him?
But remember that Obama, President Obama, who, against whom he'd be running, was a big proponent of the Wall Street bailout. And while the Wall Street bailout started under the administration of George W. Bush, Obama certainly wouldn't be in a position to criticize Romney for having supported the bailout. He'd probably be thanking him. On the other hand, as popular as the Olympics are for Mitt Romney, that's how unpopular the words Wall Street are now when you talk to Americans. And Wall Street bailout, really not something I think either President Obama or Mitt Romney would want to talk about in a general election.
All right. Now, the issue that has been dominating the primary in so many ways, and, you know, I am so surprised to see that we are sort of in a debate about contraception and, you know, the things, whole Planned Parenthood, contraception. I mean, these are things that are sort of in the larger world coming back to bite people. You know, Virginia's governor just had to back down on a, you know, strong anti-abortion measure there. There was the whole flap about the Komen Foundation's contributions to Planned Parenthood where they backed down. And yet in the Republican Party, this debate is alive and well, and sort of who is, you know, the strictest candidate on this issue is something they're all vying for that, you know, position. So here's a stretch last night when John King, the moderator for CNN, tried to raise the issue of contraception.
Let's get right back to questioning the four contenders for the Republican nomination. We take a question now from CNNpolitics.com. You can see it up on the screen here. Since birth control is the latest hot topic, which candidate believes in birth control, and if not, why? As you can see, it's a
very popular question.
It's a very popular question in the audience, as we can see. Look, we're not going to spend a ton of time on this, but it is. Please.
Can I just make a point?
Sure.
These guys are giving you some feedback here, John.
I see that.
I think they're making it very clear.
I want to make two quick points, John. The first is there is a legitimate question about the power of the government to impose on religion activities which any religion opposes. That's legitimate.
There is.
But I just want to point out, you did not once in the 2008 campaign, not once did anybody in the elite media ask why Barack Obama voted in favor of legalizing infanticide. Okay? So let's be clear here.
All right. So just to explain what that last remark was about, which offer a fact check, Gingrich is referring to the so-called Born Alive Act, which would have required that any fetus that survived abortion be given immediate medical attention. That was an Illinois issue. And as a state senator in Illinois, Obama opposed it. PolitiFact points out that he did so because he thought it would be struck down by the courts, and Illinois already had a law on its book requiring medical care in those situations. But in any event, Susan, here we are talking about, you know, sort of infanticide, contraception, birth control. Why has the Republican Party gotten so wrapped up in this? And, you know, what happens when this primary is finally over and they, you know, go to the American people and start having this discussion?
Yeah. You know, I think there are two reasons that come to mind about why we're hearing about this. One is that because evangelical Christians and social conservatives have become such an important part of the Republican Party, and they provide so much of the energy behind the party. The second thing is, I think it's a sign that the economy is getting a little better. You know, there was a time when no one would talk about anything but the economy because people felt like their future was so imperiled. I think the economy's gotten a little better. Some of these other issues then once again come to the fore. But what a danger for Republicans, because they'll need a united party in November to win the election, but they'll also need to be able to appeal to independent voters in the middle who tend not to be social conservatives, many of them libertarians, and to women. And we know that women are more of a swing voter group than men are. A lot of women who live in places like the New York suburbs and the Philadelphia suburbs and in the Denver suburbs swing from one party to the other. And these kinds of issues, I think, tend to repel them, create big problems for the Republican Party down the road.
So maybe the Republicans are smart to be saying, no more debates, let's just get through this.
And weren't you struck once again by the role that the audiences have played in these Republican debates from the start? They've been really loud and raucous. They've booed and cheered, and it's really they've really been like the fifth, they were like the fifth person on stage last night.
All right, thank you so much. We have to end it there. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief from USA Today. We'll be talking to you soon, no doubt, but maybe not for a while about a Republican debate. When we come back, we will be talking about the unusually high number of journalist deaths in the past year. Thanks so much, Susan Page. We'll be right back.